everyone, and welcome back to the Everyday Business Show. I'm your host, Tony Lontis, and today we have another amazing interview with Dr. Olivia Ong. But before I introduce you to Dr. Olivia, here's what you need to remember. If you're listening to us live on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, or Twitch, or even Twitter, just remember the notes from the show will appear when this is streamed live. If you're watching post-show, then all the information and links is not only available on tonylontis.com, but also in the information attached to this interview. A reminder too that you can watch this interview on Binge TV Networks USA, Hero Go TV USA, and on the Tony TV channel app, available on all Roku, Samsung, and LG smart TVs across the planet. Now, Dr. Olivia Ong is the CEO of Dr. Olivia Ong, the heart-centered doctor. This is the second in our show series. And before I speak to Olivia, here's what you need to know. Olivia is a compassionate leadership and resilience speaker, and her story talks about how she overcame a tragic and traumatic spinal cord injury when she was a resident in 2008. So that was partway through her medical training. She had to learn to walk again with two sticks and a limp, and that took an agonizing 4 years. Dr. Olivia's spinal cord injury taught her a very important lesson around self-compassion. And behind this, she created a business and wrote a book, The Heart-Centered Doctor and Heart-Centered Medicine. Now, we're going to be talking a little bit more about this and the book during today's show. And Dr. Olivia now practices full-time as a rehab and pain specialist. She coaches one-on-one. She speaks. She does workshops. And she talks about burnout, compassion, fatigue, and vicarious trauma in doctors and medical practitioners. And she thinks that she needs to provide a positive legacy for our upcoming generation of doctors. Last week, we spoke extensively about the impacts on doctors of working in the medical industry. And today we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But firstly, welcome back to the show, Dr. Olivia.
Thanks again, Tony, for having me.
It's a delight to get to talk to you, and we were chatting just before the show. So not only is Dr. Olivia in Christmas holiday mode, but the kids are home from school, which means that she has to get a six-year-old organized and set up so that he's happy for the next 50 minutes or so whilst we film our segment. So not only is Dr. Olivia a wife, a mother, rehab specialist, and pain specialist, she's now working on a legacy to leave for young doctors. Before we get on with a few of my other questions, I wanted you to talk briefly this morning about your love of rehab and pain medicine, because it's very close to your heart, isn't it?
Yeah, it is indeed very close to my heart. So the reason why I love rehab medicine and pain medicine as well, they so much, is because they focus holistically on the individual. They don't just look and focus on a certain disease and then just focus on treating it. So that's the beauty of rehabilitation medicine. And that's purely the reason why I chose that particular specialty. I mean, I chose rehabilitation medicine way before my spinal cord injury. But obviously life can be ironical, and I ended up being a rehabilitation patient. And because I became my own textbook, it made the whole experience of working as a rehabilitation physician so much richer, so much more meaningful. Not only I could understand where the patients are coming from, I just totally get it. And then I could just offer that much more support, emotional and mental support, from a different level. I think it's a different level of understanding and knowing as well.
And your focus on pain as well would be incredibly helpful for your rehab patients, because often there's pain involved in rehab and recovery, isn't there?
Absolutely, Tony. And pain, there is actually a backstory behind pain medicine
Yes.
because I actually chose that particular specialty because of what I've observed as a spinal cord injury survivor in America. So when I was doing my intern, in our last episode, I talked about my intensive
You
rehab and
did.
Project Walked.
Yes.
And I was there for close to 3 years. So I got to connect with other spinal cord injury survivors. Sadly, with spinal cord injury, pain is a very common phenomenon associated with a spinal cord injury. And it's not just one form of pain, it's different
Multiple.
levels of pain. Yeah, multiple levels of pain. And a lot of it comes arising from the spinal cord injury itself
Yes.
because it's part of the central nervous system, like the brain and spinal cord. That type of pain, we call it central pain. It's really hard to treat, and the suffering is a lot more tremendous and intense. And that's what I got to witness. As a fellow spinal cord injury survivor, my friends were all suffering from chronic pain. And not only that, they were self-medicating with opioid medications,
Yes,
like drugs. Cannabis is legal in America, so they were
it is.
also taking that as well. And they were taking alcohol. And, it's just not pleasant to see your friends suffer like that. So I told myself, once I get a chance to go back to Melbourne to resume my career, I'm going to subspecialize in that. And that's what I eventually did.
Yes.
Purely because of what I had to witness visually and personally, it was very sad and very heartbreaking as a friend. And I promised myself that I will want to help people like my fellow spinal cord injury survivors and other neurological disabilities as
Oh,
well.
yes.
If they have pain issues.
Dr. Olivia, what are some of the things that help you and help your patients work through that pain? What are some of the things that you found that help the most with that chronic pain management?
Thankfully, I didn't get any chronic pain because people are always
Good.
curious. Even my own patients are very curious and they ask me because I walk with sticks because they
Yes.
assume when you walk with sticks, you are in a lot of pain. But I use it because I have a actual weakness in my leg in terms of strength. So I do need the sticks for support. But I
Yes.
don't have chronic pain per se. So I was pretty lucky. But not
Yay.
many other people with spinal cord injury. And I think one of the biggest thing that I've seen in the patients that I've looked after chronic pain who actually went on to do really well in our pain management programs and subsequently it's thriving in the community is their self-acceptance. That's
Okay.
one of the three pillars of self-compassion. Eventually they have to go through a journey of self-compassion themselves. Like, first of all, they have to be aware that they are suffering. A lot of them are not aware that they are even suffering.
Okay.
Yeah, the thing,
Okay.
yeah, and the thing, and the thing with suffering, it feels quite insular and isolatory and
Yes.
quite lonely.
Yes.
And then you get quite harsh critic. You start
Yes.
judging yourself, blaming
Yes.
yourself for your pain and all that.
Yes.
So ruminating thoughts. I think if the patient or the individual with chronic pain eventually is aware of their suffering, that they are in pain, that they're willing to seek for help and reach out to other people for help. And also, if they start to accept themselves for who they are and accept pain as it is, and then take charge of their lives rather than pain taking charge over their life, it's
Yes.
then that's the transformation that I see the most in my patients, from my perspective as a doctor. Yes.
It's quite a journey, isn't it? So I've got chronic aggressive rheumatoid arthritis, and the pain it is like nothing I can describe other than to say that it's like a million knives stabbing my joints. Now, it's not like that all the time, and I've actually had it long enough now that sometimes I don't notice, but if I'm cranky and cranky for a number of days, then I'll go, oh, my body's really hurting. So there's actually not caught, I've actually got to the point where there's not actually a conscious recognition until I go, oh, okay, I've been cranky for a couple of days. What's that about? Oh, yeah, body's really painful. And you can live with it and have a wonderful life. And it is a lot about mindset, isn't it? And going, okay, well, there's not a lot I can do about this. I can take loads and loads of drugs, but that doesn't really solve anything. And
No, it doesn't.
if I do these other things, like I meditate and have quiet time and rest and relaxation, for me works the best. That helps just get on with life, because life is fabulous and you don't want it spoiled by chronic pain. And there is a way to live with it and work with it and enjoy life. In talking about this subject, we need to quickly remember that dealing with patients that have tremendous injuries, rather, trauma, and chronic pain has an impact on their carers, i.e., the doctors and nurses that look after them. And it's possibly linked to the workload, but it's also linked to the intellectual and spiritual and all the rest of it. And it causes doctors angst and burnout, and they're already very hardworking. So, how do you see this playing out? We spoke a bit about this last week, but how do you see this playing out in the healthcare system right at the moment, Dr. Olivia?
So right at the moment, doctors and nurses are probably even more than ever under the pump because they do not have a choice in patients with COVID turning up at the hospital doorstep. They just have to take a few deep breaths and then just go and they really have it's survival mode for all these frontline healthcare workers. And as we alluded to in our episode last week, they have to wear that PPE all day as well.
Yes, and it's
And they have to be
hot
isolated
and
away.
itchy and
And we're coming
not
to summer
pleasant.
in Australia, so it's going to be even more uncomfortable for the frontline healthcare workers from a,
Absolutely.
Maslow's
Yes. Yes.
hierarchy needs perspective. It's really hard to look after yourself from a hydration and nutrition perspective when you're wearing a gear like that all day. So more than ever, they're still under that kind of very harsh working environment. Even though that our country is relatively in freedom at the moment, outwardly
Well,
that's what it looks like, but not in the
yes,
hospitals.
and I'm hesitant to bring this up, but only because I've had a few conversations with. So Queensland has done marvelously well. We haven't seen the level of virus that Victoria, for instance, has had. We haven't seen the impacts on the healthcare system, and Queenslanders are a little apathetic about the whole situation. And so there's that constant rhetoric of they're lying to you. We've got enough ICU beds. Our hospitals aren't filled, et cetera, et cetera. But that's because we live in Queensland and we haven't had to deal with the level of virus and infection that, say, Victoria or even New South Wales has had to deal with. So it's a different perspective, isn't it? And I can well imagine that Victorian healthcare is fatigued, well and truly fatigued. Is that your experience, Olivia?
Absolutely, Tony. Our state is the worstly affected of all the states because we've been through
Absolutely.
multiple lockdowns, and the healthcare workers are tired, and
Yes.
a lot of them are so tired and burnt out that some of them actually have left the profession, to be honest. And if this trend is going to continue, it's just going to
It's
result in the
bad.
workforce collapsing, and that's not good for the
It's
healthcare
not good.
system.
Not good. Because we're not on the other side of the pandemic. I know with lots of states opening up in preparation for Christmas, a lot of people are thinking, oh, this is over. But it's not, is it? There will be ongoing issues and possibly ongoing upheaval in the way that we look at life and the way that we do life and impacts on our healthcare system and our doctors and nurses. And I think that people forget what it's like or don't understand what it's like to be constantly working so hard under so much pressure and so much stress. It has a huge impact on doctors and nurses. And as you said, that's why they're leaving the healthcare profession in droves at the moment. Now, I want to switch gears and talk about your book, pardon me, The Heart-Centeredness of Medicine. Can you tell the audience about your book, Dr. Olivia?
I wrote this book, Tony, because I've just watched way too many doctors suffering from burnout, and I've been there too, so I know what it feels like. And my book talks a lot about heart-based tools like self-compassion, mindfulness, just, to help doctors manage their burnout or even recover from it. The truth is, self-compassion is really, it's a wonderful tool for doctors to be able to, put them, look after themselves, and then so that they can best, serve their patients and their family. And the thing is, doctors find it hard to do that because we've been so conditioned, and I'm sure nurses as well, we're conditioned to put our patients first.
Yes.
And our working environment may not be, maybe quite stressful, and we have got pressure to look after a lot of patients at the same time. So there is basically no time to look after yourself, but self-compassion comes from within. And there is always time for self-compassion. I think doctors and nurses will have to realize that if they don't put themselves first, they won't be good for anybody. And that's the whole reason why I wrote the book, because I've just not only seen doctors suffering from mental health issues like anxiety, depression, because of burnout, there's been a lot of physician suicides. In fact, one doctor dies every day in America. One doctor dies every day in America.
Really? That's how bad it is. No idea. I knew that it was bad, but I didn't actually realize. So when we think about that and conceptualize that, that's someone who has spent up to 10 years studying, learning, and educating themselves so that they can look after other human beings, and they're so overworked, so stressed, so anxious that they see no other way than ending their life. That is incredibly profound to think about, that the carers are ending their life because they're not cared for. I'm so glad that you are openly talking about these subjects, Dr. Olivia, and I'm thinking that heart-centered doctors are how we would like all of our doctors to be heart-centered. What do you think makes a heart-centered doctor, and why are they important in our healthcare system?
To me, a heart-centered doctor, I guess that's the whole reason why I named my business the heart-centered doctor, will be to just be you and be uniquely you. That's the whole premise of my work. Is a lot of the times when we are working as doctors or nurses or healthcare professionals, we wear a certain persona, but we're not truly ourselves.
Yeah.
And being a heart-centered doctor will be speaking from that heart, from the heart, and speaking the truth, being unapologetically you, and being sincere, being truthful, and no fakeness or that kind of thing. Just being who you are.
Yes.
That's the simplicity, and loving yourself just as you love everyone else. Self-love, very important.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of us operate from the head up, but not from the heart. So I'm encouraging, or creating a movement rather, of heart-centered doctors who are willing to stand up for their cause, impact the world, and speaking from the heart. That's essentially what my movement is all about. Just being us, being uniquely us.
Yeah. Dr. Olivia, there's not a lot spoken about these concepts within your medical training, is there? It's just there's such focus on the scientific and body systems and the mountain of information that doctors need to know and understand. Do you hope in the future that heart-centeredness, self-compassion, learning to deal with burnout will become an integral part of what doctors study at university?
Yeah, it's funny how you mentioned that, Tony, because yesterday I was having a meeting with doctors from the Asia Pacific region. We're all self-compassion teachers, mindfulness teachers, but we're all doctors too, and nurses and psychologists. And a big part of our mission is to actually introduce self-compassion and mindfulness into the medical student curriculum and into the hospitals. And that's our core vision. So it's funny how you mentioned that, because I had this meeting with the beautiful healthcare workers, and we believe that this should be taught even as early as the medical student days.
Absolutely.
Before they go before they burn out, like, you know, when they get to the intern years, resident years, they burn out. So I want, there's a, I think all of
Absolutely.
us were thinking the same wavelength that yes, they need to, the medical students will need to know about it way back,
Because,
you know, like in medical school.
Dr. Olivia, as a medical student, you get the worst jobs when you're on clinical rotation. You get treated
Yes.
really badly. You work
Yeah, I remember those days.
incredibly hard. And sometimes you're working for 24 hours straight. I mean, as from a nursing perspective, I used to watch young residents really struggle. And back then, I wouldn't have known how to help them other than, the normal things like, hey, have a look at this. Perhaps you want to do XYZ, or perhaps you want to review blah, blah, blah. But if we actually taught that in the early years of student placement and training, perhaps we could circumvent some of this fatigue and burnout. The other thing, Dr. Olivia, is I could never understand why they made residents work such long hours, because that's just not good for anyone. Do you see any solution in the future around that idea? Do you think ideology is shifting so that we don't do that to our student doctors?
Yeah, I think that's been a lot of attention lately about long junior doctors having longer working hours. There's actually a class action in Victoria. I'm
Good.
not sure about other states.
Good.
Yeah, against hospitals for making them work longer hours without pay. So there is
Yes.
awareness now, and I believe hospitals are actually working quite hard to hire more staff to
Good.
cover more roles. I think because of it made it to the media, and there was been a lot of hype about it. And obviously, the hospitals are like, "Oh, we better do something about it now,"
Yes.
and they are doing something about it. Yeah, totally.
But what a way to treat a human being who is in a caring profession, who is
Exactly.
making life and death decisions about other human beings, to make them work for such a long time. Because research suggests, and I can't remember actual numbers, but you get to a certain point and your decision making really deteriorates. Why would we do that to our doctors and our nurses? Why? I don't understand.
Yeah, I believe, Tony, it's because the people higher up or people in admin don't really know what it's like to be a doctor or a nurse. So I've suggested to, I guess, hospital staff, I mean, people who are a bit higher up there, that perhaps they should shadow the doctors and nurses for a week and to actually see what we do and then create the roster, create the working conditions. But it's because people who are planning the roster, planning the working environment have no idea what's going on in the real life of a doctor or a nurse.
Absolutely. Often you've got an admin level person doing the rosters for nursing and doctors. And my belief has always been that that's a health professional's role. And no one should be rostering doctors other than a doctor. No one should be rostering nurses other than a nurse. And any of the other things in between. I understand, having done rosters for many, many years, that it's challenging, but you actually get to know your staff really well. You know that your chief, your senior scrub nurse has to get the children to school on Wednesdays, and you actually get to know their lives and what impacts on their working lives. It's a much better way to do things, and I'm sure if we did the same thing with doctors, that it would improve things. So switching tacks again, I wanted to talk about the imposter syndrome, and it's a wonderful topic in Australia because we also have a thing called tall poppy syndrome. So let's talk about the imposter syndrome, what that means from a doctor's perspective, and why it's important to talk about it.
You know, imposter syndrome is something that I guess I've suffered from for many, many years. But until I truly reframe it in a certain way, it really was affecting the way I was showing up. So medicine is a very competitive environment, and you know, people who get into medical school have to compete at the beginning to get in, even to get into medical school. Then after you graduate from medical school, you have to compete again for, you know, specialized registrar positions and things. So and there's always that competitive spirit. And every time you see someone who's apparently, you know, much more
in your mind,
you know, has more achievements, yeah, more achievements, seems to be doing much better than yourself, you start going, oh, I don't know. Even though I'm doing quite well myself, it'll be like,
absolutely.
What if they find out that I'm not even as good as that other fella, like, or that other lady? Like, I'm just like, I don't even know anything. Like, you know, like that, yeah. That is something that constantly plagues, you know, doctors, high performing doctors. And I think it's ultimately from that, you know, sense of guilt and shame if you, you know, of something.
Make a mistake or you don't perform well enough.
Exactly.
Or you miss something, and that happens by virtue of the fact that you're a human being. It's got nothing to do with the fact that you're not performing. That's just life, isn't it? We're particularly hard on ourselves here in Australia. Mm-hmm. We have what's called the tall poppy syndrome. So if you rise too far above the majority of the populace, then we like to take aim at you specifically and bring you down. This is not helpful, is it? Why do you think we have such a bad problem with imposter syndrome and tall poppy syndrome here in Australia? What do you think that's about?
I think I can see that Australia and America are very different because I've lived in both places. Tall poppy syndrome doesn't exist in America.
It doesn't.
And in fact, if you're successful, it's good. And when you're successful in America, other people cheer you on as well. Mm. And I've sensed, like you said, in Australia, it's the opposite. Even in medicine, it's very clear cut. If you shine too brightly, other people want to tear you down, report you to the boss or whatever. They'll try all things to bring you down. So it happens quite aggressively in medicine, unfortunately. And I'm sure it happens
I have seen it in medicine where you've got a brilliant young registrar who is really just switched on and it's quite evident because they're engaging and their knowledge is amazing. And you see them and you perhaps see a consultant who notices this and they do the most terrible things to them, give them the worst jobs, the worst shifts.
Yeah.
And why they should be encouraging this bright shining light because they might be the one that discovers something that changes the world of pain medicine or rehab or cancer. I think that needs to be talked about really openly and that there needs to be processes in which young registrars and young doctors can go, hey, this behavior is not okay. It's not okay to treat me like that. Do you see, Dr. Olivia, that some of those things are changing? Are there avenues for young doctors to talk about these issues in their practice before they get to become specialists?
Yeah, certainly. I think the younger doctors, like the younger doctors in training, are actually more aware of this now.
Good.
Because there's social media. Like in my time, social media is non-existent, was non-existent. you know, they have access and they're so into self-development, personal development as well, these young doctors. So they know how to stand up for themselves. If they see injustice, they will call it out pretty early. You know, like the unsafe working hours has existed in my time. And I'm sure it existed in my senior's time.
Yes.
But we didn't talk about it because we thought that was normal and we had to do like, it. Just put up with it.
Yes.
Yeah, but these younger ones, they're like, They know what their rights are, their entitlements, and they stand up for it.
Good.
So we always call them all those millennials, but they're standing up for themselves.
And
we call them the millennials. exactly. And I think a way of reframing imposter syndrome is to reframe it as a very good thing.
Yes. Like,
imposter syndrome means that you're actually growing, expanding, and you're reaching new levels, new heights. That's how I see it. The moment now I feel imposter syndrome, I go, oh yeah, I'm growing again. I'll take up this challenge. Whereas in the past, I'll be scared. But now it's like, okay, this is telling me something. Like, but I'm willing to take up that challenge. I think that's a good way to look at imposter syndrome. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because for all of us, whether we're a doctor, nurse, or whatever, it's always going to pop up, isn't it? There's always someone doing something that makes you go, oh, maybe I could do that better. Always. It happens to me all the time. But I'm like you,
it happens to,
and have learned to reframe it and go, but I love the idea that when it triggers in your mind, you go, oh, I'm growing again. That's a really powerful way to look at it, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. And that's helped me a lot, especially when now I'm an entrepreneur.
Yes.
And entrepreneurs get a lot of imposter syndrome too, because there's always other entrepreneurs I'm flying first class, I'm earning like seven figures or whatever. And I'm like, oh, there's a lot of imposter syndrome going on in entrepreneurship.
I was going to say it's pretty rife across entrepreneurship because entrepreneurs, by virtue of what they do, they're striving for that bigger impact and the global reach and the impact on people's lives. You're driven by a huge, big vision. And so you sit and you look at yourself and you think, oh, my goodness, I should be doing that, or I should have this number of followers, or I should be flying first class, when in fact you're actually in the perfect place usually that you need to be. And for you, flying first class might not be a thing. You might just want to fly business class or what's upgraded economy?
Premium economy.
Yes, premium. See, so long since I've flown that I've forgotten airline terminology.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Damn sad. It's about recognizing that you're a unique individual and that you have unique dreams, and what success looks like to you may not be the success that you see. And I think that's helpful too, if you actually define success on your own terms and go, I can't be bothered with that, or this is enough for me. Because for some people, success is living quietly in a rural home, and it's not about the big flashy cars and all the rest of it.
Exactly.
It's about what matters to you and what lights you up, and it's about the impact. And you can have that impact very quietly. It doesn't have to be big and brash and Tony Robbins loud. It can be Dr. Olivia on impact, because that's unique and that's special. For doctors and nurses, you've started doing something really special. So not only have you written the book on heart-centeredness of medicine, but you've also been doing some coaching and speaking and workshops. Can you tell us what you do for health practitioners and in particular doctors, and how you do this and how you fit it in to your busy life as a specialist?
Yeah, so thanks, Tony, for those questions. And, you know, coaching has always been something that I've actually been doing for many, many years.
Mm.
But for the last 10 years, I've actually mentored and coached so many, you know, doctors in training throughout the hospital systems in Australia. And I've mentored many of them through their career progression and also through their burnout prevention and management. And I told myself, you know, I want to help more people, but I can't keep doing it in a hospital environment.
Yeah.
And doing it I guess from a business setting makes a lot of sense, because I have the skill set. I'm also certified as a life and business coach myself.
Yes.
So I've taken, you know, like my coaching skills to a next level. And I'm certified in a few other areas as well, like public speaking and all that. So just helping my mentees and clients as much as I can, from, because you know, with their career, there's a lot of things they can face. They can face fear of speaking in public. That's a big one. Like, doctors do fear public speaking as well. and how to actually stand up for themselves. That's actually a thing that a lot of my clients come in and they
They
don't
just don't know
set
how to
enough
do it.
boundaries. They don't stand. Exactly. So my whole my coaching program is actually catered for doctors who are probably, they're sort of self-aware that they are having burnout and they want to do something about it. So they're aware of their problem and they're aware that I can help them with the through coaching. I guess that's why in marketing we call it problem aware, solution aware, whatever you want to call it.
Yes,
but that's
yes.
that's essentially when my clients come to me, they say, hey, you know, I know you can help me through burnout and you've had many years of experience. Can you help me? And that's why I do. And coaching is just such a magical experience because I get to see them transform,
yes,
you know, bit by bit. And when they finish up, they're just a lot happier, more joyful, doing, you know, impacting the world. Because all of, you know, doctors are, we're all mission driven people. We all want to impact
Absolutely.
The world.
You want to heal
And, you
people
know,
and stop them being sick and stop them dying and all the rest of it. Absolutely. If anyone is impact driven, it's going to be a doctor. Dr. Livy, the other thing is that people might not realize that you, by virtue of being a healthcare practitioner, you spend your life educating, teaching, mentoring from almost the get-go. It's either
exactly
other health professionals, doctors and nurses, nurses and doctors, your patient's family. So this actually makes wonderful sense to me. And I'm not sure why we haven't had many doctor entrepreneurs before. And it's one of the reasons I was so attractive to what Dr. Olivia does, because it's a powerful reiteration of using medicine in a different way. One of your programs is called Burnout to Brilliance Program. Can you tell us about that program, what it does?
Sure, Tony. So my program from Burnout to Brilliance, essentially it's a 4-week program encompassing self-compassion, just purely focusing on self-compassion. And self-compassion is a beautiful tool. And, you know, it's mainly about being your own best friend. That's what it is,
yes,
essentially.
Yes.
And why is it so important? Because not only it helps to reduce stress levels, as we know, chronic stress, big issue in the healthcare industry.
Definitely.
And with chronic stress, yeah, you know, that's cortisol and that's adrenaline. I will not go into the details
that your body
physiologically.
Just doesn't need excess of.
Exactly.
Yes.
No. And self-compassion, actually, research has shown it actually reduces the cortisol and adrenaline levels. It actually improves the we call it parasympathetic nervous system.
Yes.
It's because when we do self-compassion practices, we actually release the oxytocin, you know, the hormone oxytocin. When you read stories to your kids, that's the hormone that, you know, you feel a bit lovey-dovey with your kid.
Yes.
Going, oh. Yeah, and you bond so much better. Essentially, it's that when you actually do self-compassion, like showing compassion towards yourself, you're actually releasing your own inner oxytocin, and that reduces stress. It's that simple, but very hard to do. Like
it is
like
hard
intellectually
to do.
Very, very, very simple to understand, hard to do.
I know. I didn't have any concept of self-compassion nor self-love until I actually reached my 40s. And it was actually after a breakdown that I was forced to look at what self-compassion and why it was important. And it's been a game changer. So if I could teach that to if we could teach that to children so that they started from very young and understood it their whole life, again, huge impact on humanity, because you cannot give from an empty cup. You can't love from a loveless environment, and that starts with yourself. And it's not about thinking you're better than anyone else. It's just about simply accepting who you are, where you are in life, and making sure that you're okay so that you can create that big impact and purpose that you want to. So for doctors, that sole purpose is usually around health and well-being, isn't it?
Health and well-being mainly. And a lot of doctors actually have other creative ideas or hobbies as well. I've actually met many, many doctors who not only focus on medicine, they also have other interests. for example, like creative writing. Like I've met authors like myself who are doctors too, and coaches. There's actually a growing number of doctors who are training as coaches to help their peers through burnout. There's a few of us now. That's more than, like, let's say 10 years ago, there's a lot more of us now.
Yes.
And yeah, so that's the beautiful thing.
And there's some amazing medical inventors as well. Some of the most fascinating inventions have come from the medical field out of necessity of wanting to solve a problem that their particular patients had, and they've gone on to invent something or create a surgery that is life-changing. So we want our medical staff to be completely aware of self-compassion, because we want them to shine, don't we? We want them to be brilliant, because that improves the world. It improves health. It improves patient lives. It has an overall wonderful impact on the world in general. So that's one of your programs. And the other program I wanted to talk about is your life transformation program, and in particular, the CIA formula. So what is the Life Transformation Program?
Yeah, I designed this particular program, Life Transformation Program for Doctors. It's my signature one-on-one program where I take them through a journey from essentially, when they come to me, they're quite burnt out, to thriving and nourished and feeling quite nourished and flourishing, basically. Yes. It's a 12-week program where I take them through a journey of self-discovery, spiritual awakening.
Yes.
And yeah, it's just beautiful to see. And the CIA formula is something that
I love it.
Invented. Yeah, it's quite obviously CIA, you know, we think about
yeah,
cops,
it's good.
But it means compassion. It means intuition. Yeah. It means attitude. So let me just go a little bit. Compassion, showing compassion for others and yourself. That's essentially what it is. Mm-hmm. That's a big part of what I do in the Life Transformation Program for Doctors. Mm-hmm. Intuition, I try to guide my clients through some intuitive exercises, which I've learned over the years to help them rely on their intuition more rather than their analytical mind all the time, which gets in the way.
I was just going to say, how hard is it for doctors to listen to their intuitive voice versus their analytical science, because they can work amazingly well together. So I'm actually really curious from my own perspective as well, how you get them to tap back into that intuitive knowing and integrate it with their analytical, scientific, data-based mind that medical practitioners have. How does that go? Yeah.
So I take them through some meditative practices and some intuitive exercises. Like, for example, I get them to draw circles. I know it sounds really simple, but when figuratively you see two circles, I get them to write victim, creator. It really, like, circles are really amazing work.
Yes.
When they see things like that, it's visually like, oh yes, I've been living in my victim mode for a while now. So it's, and then get them to tap into why are you in the victim mode? And then getting to them to intuitively just say as it is and not like trying to analyze it and all that. So it's just a very intuitive exercise to get them to take them through and just finding out where they're at and where they can be. I think if once they know that, oh, I can, my intuition is a lot more powerful than I thought. It can.
Absolutely.
I need to learn to embrace it rather than, you know, just hide it, because we use a lot of our intuition actually in clinical medicine. Like we go, maybe that person has this particular disease. That's intuition. That's not like your mind telling you, that's not your analytical mind telling you, that's your intuition going, oh, I've seen that before. Yeah, that's that one.
That's that
disease.
Yes. I find this a wonderful conversation to have, because many, many years ago, if you were to say, oh, I think da 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 da, in the absence sometimes of any clinical foundation, people look at you strange. But I've seen it in practice. A specialist go, oh, I think it might be this, and there may not be, but eventually they'll find out, oh, it is this. And that was from an intuition. So I'm excited that doctors are talking about intuition, because it is a powerful tool and a powerful knowing that, oh, this is what it is. And I'm so glad that you're doing that work. And what about the A, Dr. Olivia?
So attitude means an open mind, a beginner's mind. So every experience you have with the or encounter with your patients, or every precious moment you have with your kids, just have a beginner's mind. Don't take all the baggage from home, from work home.
Yes.
And just, yeah, every learning experience is a new experience. That's what it is, attitude. And I think quite a number of doctors don't have that. They're very conservative. They're closed up.
Yes,
and
yes.
They're not willing to receive new ideas. That's what AA is attitude, open attitude, open mind.
Oh, yeah. Always learning. And that's fantastic. Gosh, Dr. Olivia, I'm so glad that you're doing this work. It seems life-changing to me from my perspective. And whilst I'm no longer a clinician, I just see the power in your work. So how do you work with doctors and nurses, or predominantly doctors?
I predominantly work with doctors, with the Life Transformation Program for Doctors. But
yes,
from burnout to brilliance, I'm working with all healthcare professionals because it's so much needed right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Our
healthcare workers, from paramedics to even the technicians in the hospitals, the piece we call it personal care assistants, even those porters PCAs. Who are transporting, PCAs, transporting patients here and there in the hospitals, they need to learn self-compassion too.
Absolutely.
So it's open to all frontline healthcare workers, actually all healthcare workers. So
I've been
getting quite a lot of people from all walks of life in healthcare joining this program, and they enjoy it because they get to see what self-compassion can do for themselves internally and externally.
Yeah. So how do healthcare practitioners connect with you? What's the best way, Dr. Olivia, to connect with you? You've got this amazing website that has all of the programs listed out, and there's clickable links and buttons to connect with you. But you're also open to connection on social media, yeah?
Yeah, that's correct, Tony. So I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn a fair bit, Facebook, Instagram. These are my three main platforms.
Yeah.
So any healthcare workers can reach me through
Instagram. And your website is simply droliviaong.com, isn't it?
It's drolivialeong.com.
That's right. I forget the Lee. I'm so sorry. For anyone listening,
that's all right.
If you've missed that, it will absolutely be in the show notes. And if you're watching this live, just jump onto tonylondis.com and you will see Dr. Olivia as a co-host and all of her links and information about her book, where to get a book, where to connect with her, her programs, and how she helps healthcare practitioners, and in particular doctors, because that's what you want to create as your life work, that helping doctors do better, get better, be better, and not burn out. If we can save those one specialist a day in America that's passing away because they just can't take it anymore, that is phenomenal in itself. And I'm really excited to know that you work with the whole range of healthcare professionals as well, but particularly excited about the work that you do with doctors, because they're so important across our lives for any number of reasons. Dr. Olivia, in our last and next show, which is happening the week before Christmas, we're going to be revisiting lots of this information. And you've got resources as well available on your website. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, so on my website, there's a free resource on 5 ways to overcome imposter syndrome in female physicians. And I've also got the first chapter of my book that you can download for free as well. So there's two free resources there. But if you want to connect with me, I'm available through, you can just email me at hello@drolivialeong.com. And that's on my website as well. The email address can directly email me.
Yes. And if you click on the contact form on Dr. Olivia Lee Ong's website, it will take you directly. You can also book Dr. Olivia to speak to your healthcare team. So if you're listening today and you're from the private or public sector, in a hospital, I encourage you to get Dr. Olivia to speak to your team. And Olivia, you're hoping to speak in all over the place in 2022, provided things go okay with COVID. But you want to do more speaking and more connecting, don't you?
Definitely. I've actually been invited already to speak at the Asia Pacific Mindfulness Conference next year, and
That's awesome.
there's lots of conferences that I've been invited to already. So I'm just meeting up with different
Fantastic.
event planners just to work things out. But it's just been such an amazing experience. I think when you have a vision, the other similar people with similar visions
Are
are
attracted
just
and off you
somehow
go.
attracted.
Yeah.
Exactly, and coming into my ecosystem, and we're just happy to just
Amazing.
connect because it's
Absolutely.
really nice. Exactly.
And that your particularly your work around burnout, self-compassion, it's powerful stuff because once you impact one person, it has a ripple effect across the entire world. And we as human beings have the capacity and capability to be amazing and just helping one student doctor discover self-compassion and be self-aware could in fact lead to amazing things like incredible discoveries, doctor-led changes that help patients recover from any sort of disease process, answers to the big cancer questions that we have are within our grasp. And in particularly in the next 10 years, I see that female entrepreneurs, of which you are now one, will change the face of the planet. Dr. Olivia, I can't wait to talk to you again next week. I'm incredibly grateful that I get to chat to you each week. We've had two powerful shows. Please join us next week for the final of the installment, and all three shows will eventually be available on Binge TV networks across the USA on Hero Go and also on our YouTube channel. I encourage you to connect with Dr. Olivia Ong at any stage of for any of our healthcare practitioners, from patient people who look after patients directly right up to specialists. You will be glad you took the time to talk to Dr. Olivia. Olivia, thank you so much for your time today. I'm going to let you get back to that gorgeous child of yours and wishing you an amazing day. And I can't wait to speak to you next week. And that, my
All right,
friends,
thanks,
is your
Tony.
lot for this week.